This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hey, welcome to Radio EcoShock. This week, it's a best of times, worst of times show. We start out with John Kohler, the Growing Your Greens guy on YouTube. John is an enthusiastic learner and teacher about urban gardening. He helped push me along the path to growing my own and juicing it as a great raw plant food. Our interview is full of lots of things you can do. I'm posting some links of my favorite John Kohler videos to get you started. And then it's off to New York City for a dose of the awful truth from the long-term nuclear guardian Helen Caldicott. In her time to speak on the second anniversary of the Fukushima Daiichi triple meltdown in Japan, Helen lays it out. Due to increased radiation, toxic chemicals, and climate change, life on Earth is in the intensive care unit, she says. The aging Caldicott tells us it's up to us. We are all physicians for the Earth now. It's a powerful speech from a powerful force for sanity. First, though, it's time to get you growing your greens.
Radio EcoShock.
Warning, the following interview could change your life. Our guest John Kohler has changed a lot of lives. John inspires people to grow their own food wherever they are, even in your front yard or patio. He teaches you how, for free, on YouTube. Then John gets you drinking healthy green juice that you make from your garden. And if you think you're immune to all that, stay away from his videos. I couldn't. Literally millions of people have watched the Growing Your Own Greens channel on YouTube. John Kohler, a hearty green welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Well, seriously, I've spent a ridiculous amount of time watching your home garden videos. Tell us how you went from, it looks to me, like from Chuck E. Cheese to a tan, fit guy we see on the screen now.
Wow, yeah, Chuck E. Cheese. Wow, you've done some research on me there. So, yeah, that was my last corporate job, and I had to leave the corporate world because I just wasn't agreeing with the policies and the politics and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, what happened to me is that I had what's called spinal meningitis, and actually I was hospitalized. In the hospital, the doctors told me that I might not make it out alive. So, you know, I was in my 20s at that point, and nobody wants to hear that, you know, news at any age, especially when you're in 20s and I just graduated college and I had my whole life ahead of me because, you know, I always took my health for granted, and like so many people do in today's society. And, you know, that was a big wake-up call for me that I needed to do something different to change my life, you know, and live healthier, because luckily through higher powers, I like to say, as I got out of there, because the medical system could not help me at that point. But I learned that I needed to change what I was doing so that I wouldn't end up back in the hospital again, because the doctors said that I had what's called complement immune deficiency, which is why I ended up in the hospital in the first place. They said I had defective genes due to my immune system. Because of this, what happened was I did some major dietary changes. Went to the, you know, plant-based diet, which is, besides being a lot more ecological and friendly for the environment, it's also really good for us, is what I learned. And so I did that for many, many years, and one of the principles I like to live in my life is a principle of CANI, C-A-N-I. It stands for constant and never-ending improvement. So always doing what I'm doing and try to just do one step better the next day in whatever aspect of my life, whether it's my diet, my gardening, my, you know, relationships or whatever. And what I learned after living on a plant-based diet for some years is I was eating really good food, eating really clean food, but, you know, there was a way I could do better. And the way that I found was to actually start growing my own food and growing the most nutrient-dense food that literally money can't buy these days. And that's basically got me into gardening. I didn't, you know, have a farm or anything like that. I lived in a standard suburban tract home. And, you know, I just decided to take out my front lawn and build over raised beds and just start growing my food and grow high-quality food in a small amount of space, and to prove that it can be done, and also, more importantly, to share this information with people. Because, I mean, one of the promises I made when I was in the hospital that if I did get out, you know, I would not maybe value things like money that we're so taught to value as the priority in life, but, you know, to, number one, value my health, but number two, to give back and to live in service, you know, in this life. Because, you know what, just being there for the fellow man is really all we got in life, in my opinion.
Well, how would you introduce your Growing Your Greens channel to our radio listeners? I mean, you've got several hundred videos there.
Right, yeah. So my Growing Your Greens channel, I probably have actually over 750 videos. And it's really cool because, you know, in the early years, I just kind of did it for fun, just to show what's possible and to specifically show people how to start growing their own food in their front yard if they want to. Because when I got first started doing that. I mean, I'd already always had a garden, you know, since I owned my house in the periphery, you know, on the side of the yard and just growing a few things for fun, you know. And, yeah, I could supplement my diet out of my garden, but now my goal is to eat the majority of the food out of my garden. You know, I grow 90 to 95% of my vegetable needs year-round in California. But, yeah, you know, so you could really see the transition of how I do it, how to build your raised beds. If you want to convert your front yard to do that, and I caution anybody that wants to convert their front yard, is to check with your city or homeowners association first, because unfortunately in some places in the country it may actually be illegal to grow vegetables in your front yard, which I think is ludicrous. But, yeah, whether you want to grow them in your front yard or your backyard, I have videos that take you step by step from knowing nothing to how to set up the irrigation, to how to enrich your soil to grow some of the most nutrient-dense foods that you can. I have videos, you know, where I visit other gardens and other places. I go to garden shows to show the newest products that might help people. And what I like to do is I just like to fill people with tons of ideas and, you know, let them pick the cool concepts or the cool devices or things, you know, that may let them grow more at home and, you know, they can be successful, because that's all it is. It's just about doing it and seeing what happens.
Well, in several of your videos, you do talk about the square foot method. Did you take some inspiration from Mel Bartholomew and his square foot garden method?
Oh, absolutely. So that really is what got me started in the gardening, because, you know, you always think, you look on the back of a seed packet, the spacing is 24 inches per plant, and you're like, man, I don't have that much room, and I can't grow a lot of food in a small amount of space. But with the square foot gardening method, you're really packing in the plants in a smaller, tighter density so that you can produce more. And, you know, I've even, you know, I don't know, experimented with what Mel Bartholomew's recommended spacing is on some plants and even made them maybe like an inch tighter. And with the high-quality soil that I'm growing in, I'm able to get away with that. And it seemed to have pretty good production for me.
Well, as you know, John, Mel completely changed his recommendations from his earlier book. Now he says, forget using the soil you've got. Build raised beds with compost, vermiculite, and peat moss. And that means people could grow in the city even if their soil is polluted. There really isn't an excuse not to grow now, is there?
No excuse at all. I mean, that's what I recommend. I mean, I brought in compost, and I grow, you know, in all compost. But definitely for most people, Mel's mixture is going to work and be a really good mixture. And that's what I recommend. You know, you should always build a raised bed and bring in the soil, because then you could have a more nutrient-rich soil, because you don't frankly know what's been grown in the soil in the front of your house or the back of your house, if it's been sprayed with stuff or if there's a lot of nutrition in there. But by bringing in the soil and whatnot, you can have the richest soil, which then you're going to be able to support the denser plant growth that I'm doing.
And you added a new wrinkle by suggesting people add rock dust to their soil mix and gardeners. Why is that?
Oh, the rock dust is, in my opinion, probably the next best thing after compost. So if compost is like the king, the rock dust and the trace minerals are the queen. You know, in standard agriculture, you know, conventional farming, even organic farming, you know, the main three minerals that most farmers are concerned with are NPK. And, you know, in nature, there's hundreds of minerals, or over 100 minerals. And if we're just adding three minerals back in the food that you're eating and everybody's eating has mainly three minerals in it, and then we're supposed to get our nutrients from the food we're eating. We're getting three minerals in our body, but what about all the other trace minerals? And to be healthy, a person needs all these different trace minerals, and we're supposed to take a little vitamin tablet supplement. But supplements to me are to supplement an inadequate diet. When people are eating inadequate vegetables grown on mainly three minerals, they're not getting an adequate diet, so supplementation might be necessary. But if you grow your food in all the trace minerals, you know, the plants will absorb what they need, and it's shown, and in my experience, I've shown and proven to myself that growing in trace minerals versus without, you get faster plant growth, more disease and pest resistance, also higher yields. But the kicker is the food tastes better. I mean, people always add salt and sugar to their foods because things just don't have a good flavor punch. But when you grow in the trace minerals, I mean, the foods really come alive, and I mean, your tomatoes could taste better than your neighbors. So that's a fun one, too.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Growing Your Greens host, John Kohler. Why don't we talk about a couple of shows you've done, and they are TV-quality shows, in my opinion. For starters, you made a great feature from the Riddall Green Partnership Farm in Cleveland, Ohio. The title is Aquaponic Urban Farm Grows Vegetables Through the Winter Snow. What did you find there?
Wow, that was definitely a really fun, you know, video. I was actually traveling in Cleveland, Ohio to visit actually the Vitamix factory. And at the same time, you know, whenever I travel, I always look for cool places to visit that could expose my viewers and also educate myself. Because, you know, one of the greatest things I've learned is that to be a better teacher, you got to become a better student. And I thank you for seeing them on her TV quality shoes. I try my best and have a little flip can, actually, that I make all my videos with, and I was never trained in this stuff. It's just my passion for teaching this. But at the Riddall Partnership, it was great to see that that's going on in the inner city, you know, and just all the work they're doing with their greenhouses and producing a lot of food there, and especially growing in the winter without additional supplementary heating. And that was the thing that really got me, you know. And, I mean, that's what I really want to get the message to people is that, you know, people think, oh, I can't grow in the snow. But even without using propane or electricity or any other heat source, you can grow certain crops in the winter. And actually at the Riddall Partnership, when I visited, one of the funnest parts of the video was I literally almost burnt my hand because we were in a little hoop house that they built. And they had a hot compost pile. And I stuck my hand in the middle of the compost pile. I took it out, and then my hand was red. Because it was just so hot, and the compost, which you can make for free, they're using like spent brewery waste and, you know, other waste to make that compost hot and make the bacteria work, and they put out heat as a byproduct, but that also kept their hoop house hot enough to grow some of the cool crops during the wintertime, even when it was snowing outside, and plus because they had a little hoop house over with the plastic, you know, that kept it warmer and let the sun in, and also actually they pile up, you know, around the side to help keep it a little bit more insulated.
Yeah, using that compost pile to keep the greenhouse warm was genius, I thought. The only thing I couldn't believe or understand is they were raising tilapia fish there, and you showed enough detail on the construction that anybody could build one, I think. But you said the fish needed 80-degree Fahrenheit water, and I had to think, well, they've got to have some kind of water heater to keep that temperature up right through an Ohio winter. Did they?
Yes, absolutely. So I like the greenhouses where they weren't using the fish and they were using the composting for heating. But, yes, they did have some greenhouses where they do, you know, use supplementary heat to grow food. And if I think about it, you know, I really want people to do the best they can. I'd much rather them use some supplementary heating to grow their own food instead of shipping the food from California to the East Coast in the wintertime, which I think, you know, on an ecological scale is much more devastating in many respects. Plus, the fresher the food, the higher the nutrient quality. Plus, when you're growing it yourself, you could control all those aspects. And the other thing I want to add is that they also were researching other types of fish to use that would not need warmer water, so they could use less heat and still produce, you know, what they're doing under the aquaponics.
Right, maybe trout. Well, you had one more cool video I wanted to talk to you about. Your tour of the commercial sprout growing operation at gotsprouts.com in Florida. That was gold, those inside secrets to growing sprouts. What surprised you the most there?
Wow, yeah, I really like doing the tours. When I get to show, you know, my viewers and anybody that wants to watch, like, the inside technologies and secrets, hints and tips of all these places that actually make a business out of growing sprouts, but at the same time, they're glad to share their trade secrets with people, and I'm glad that I could be able to share those with people because, you know, to me, like, the world, what it's turning into is like an open-source world, like Linus Torvalds releasing their free Linux operating system and how that's revolutionized that whole industry. I think people sharing their secrets on making their business successful and, like, how to grow sprouts so that people could now do this too is the next wave of the future, and it's not about money, but it's sharing free information to enrich other people's lives and just, instead of enriching their bank account. But at the Got Sprouts, I think the coolest thing there was that I was able to really to show people how they could grow food even in the middle of winter, you know, even in their kitchen, in their home that they're already heating anyways during the wintertime. I mean, they're growing in South Florida. In South Florida, the weather is atrocious for growing little baby sprouts. So actually, they have to do some cooling. They have fans because they have high humidity and high mold occurring in the sprouts if they're not keeping fans on and whatnot. But, you know, the power of that video is to really let people know no matter where you live, you could start growing some food, you know, in your kitchen with just a few simple devices, whether you want to grow sprouts or if you want to call them microgreens in trays, or whether you just want to germinate some seeds in a small sprout bag or sprouting device and, you know, eat your foods fresh instead of, you know, buying them out of the grocery store where they've been packaged and shipped and hydro-cooled and they finally get to you.
He said, too, you don't need big grow lights or anything to grow sprouts. As long as you can see yourself in the room, that's enough light. Just go ahead and do it. Now, let's get back to your own place. How big is it, and how much of your own food can you grow there?
Well, you know, my place is standard. I think it's around about 8,000 square feet is my lot. The house takes up about 1,600 square feet, and so then I have the rest of the lot to play with. And what I like to think is I like to maximize every square inch of my place, and if I don't have a pathway that's just wide enough for my wheelbarrow to get through or a pathway just wide enough to walk through to harvest some things. You know, everything else is prime for planting out. I built raised beds, and I had a master plan and built it all out, and the front yard's all decked out on the raised beds, and the backyard has raised beds along the edges and actually two greenhouses where I could further grow things, you know, and I don't heat my greenhouses because one of my mottos is, you know, I want to just keep my hands off. I want to let the plants fend for themselves, and if I need to do too much work to keep them alive, we'll just let them go the way of the West, and I'll grow something else that's going to be a lot easier because I don't want to have to, you know, baby my each and every plant. But yeah, I mean, I grow 90 to 95% of my vegetables year round, and so like most of my vegetable consumption are leafy greens. And other things, that's especially what I'm growing in the wintertime, like it is right now. I do more fruiting crops like the tomatoes and the peppers in the summertime, which I eat many of them, but I also dehydrate and store them, you know, for the winter.
And you take a lot of those greens and you consume them as juice. So tell us about juicers.
Right, yeah. So what I recommend is that, you know, I want people getting back to eating more of a plant-centric diet. And, you know, one of the best ways to include more of the leafy greens, especially in your diet, because, you know, we're not set up with a digestive system like the cow. And unfortunately, most people don't chew their food well enough. I mean, when you're a baby, you know, people buy baby food or hopefully make baby food to feed babies because babies don't have teeth. But just because we have teeth, we are supposed to use them and break down every mouthful of food into mush to get the optimal digestion that the baby gets when they eat the baby food. But unfortunately, in this day and age, we're all so rushed. You got your job, you got to get there on time and whatnot. People just take two chews and they swallow, or three chews and they swallow. And I think it's really important to, especially on the leafy greens that are so fibrous, to break those down so that we can get the optimal digestion out of them. And that's what the juicer does. The juicer literally does the work for you to break the food down. I mean, if you think about it, if we eat a carrot, right, out one side of us, the front side for us guys, comes the liquid, and the back side comes the solid. So we are just separating out the liquids and the solids, and that's what the juicer does. It literally separates out the fiber, which, yes, we do need fiber in our diet, and I eat a salad every night in addition to the juice I'm getting. But we need fiber to clean us out, but otherwise the fiber is a hindrance of the absorption of some of the nutrition in the food. So when we take out the fiber by juicing, then we almost literally have like a shot of instant energy that's digested, some say, within 30 minutes of drinking. So, I mean, I don't drink coffee. I drink fresh juice. The other day, actually, I had apples juice with wheatgrass. So that was a pretty interesting juice there.
I owned one of those Breville high-speed juicers, and, John, it was so noisy it frightened me, and eventually a plastic part burned out and they wouldn't replace it. So now I'm thinking a slow-speed juicer is the way to go, you say, to preserve the nutrients. Is that right?
Right. There are many different kinds of juicers, and, you know, a juicer is not a juicer is not a juicer, just like if you need a vehicle to get from point A to point B. I mean, they got cars, they got trucks, they got sport cars, and depending on what you need to do, like if you're going to go on a hot date, you might want to take a sports car, but if you're, you know, a construction guy and you need to haul some 2x4s and some 4x8s, you might need a truck. So juicers are kind of like the same thing. You want to get the juicer that's going to do best for your particular task. So the Breville juicer is a high-speed centrifugal ejection juicer. And while those are good because, you know, they're relatively fast and you could juice quickly and make a lot of juice in a limited amount of time, especially if you're really busy, they're not good for juicing things like leafy greens. They're really good at juicing things like carrots. But, you know, that's the kind of juicer I started with. And, you know, that style of juice has been out for many years. But just recently there's been a big change in the way juicers work. They've gone to the lower RPM or slow juicers, which run instead of like 10,000 RPM like the Breville, which some people have complained, sounds like an airplane taking off of my kitchen, John. They want a juicer that's not that loud because it's just so kind of violent, I like to say, in some ways. Plus, you know, the nutrition it creates because it is spinning so fast, it introduces more air or oxidation to your juice. So that's what happens when you scratch your car and, you know, it starts rusting. And, you know, while it's better to drink oxidized juice made in a high-speed juicer than a packaged and bottled juice that has been pasteurized and even loses more nutrition, it's far better, in my opinion, to drink a juice made with a slow juicer that's a lot more gentler and doesn't include, you know, as much air. And also, in some cases, as in the case of leafy greens, which I think are the most beneficial thing to juice myself, it will extract more juice.
And, John, what is at livingfoods.com?
So the living-foods.com is probably one of my first websites. Actually, I started back in 1997 to share my experience and information about the style of diet that I'm on a plant-based raw living food diet where, you know, I actually don't heat up any food. So that might sound, you know, abnormal to some people. But if you think about it, in nature, all the animals in nature, none of them eat the food. They eat it all raw. So I teach that there, and that's an old website. It hasn't been updated in a long time, but it still has a lot of good information. My newer site where I teach my dietary stuff is actually called okraw.com, where I also have more videos where I teach about my diet and lifestyle if people are interested in that.
Okraw.com. Got that. Well, back on YouTube, some of your most watched items show people how to grow specific crops like cucumbers at homes without chemicals or pesticides. About 250,000 people looked at that one. So how is the home gardener supposed to deal with pests that always show up without using these toxic products?
Well, you know, we've all been led to a bill of goods like, oh, there's pests. The solution is to spray pesticides to take them out. And, you know, I kind of look at things a little bit differently. Like, how does nature work, and would nature spray pesticides? Well, in nature, there's a few things that happen. Number one, the plants reproduce so fast that any pest can't really take a foothold. So that's one of the solutions I like to teach is to grow more food than you need, because guess what? The pests are going to get some, and that's all right, because, you know, they're creatures on the earth too. And, you know, I allocate growing some extra every year just so that if the pest devastates some of my crops, then I still have food to eat, and I grow different varieties because some pests might like this variety of tomato but not mess with your other variety. Another thing I advocate is, you know, in nature, plants have their own protection built in. Like, we have an immune system to fight off viruses and colds and whatnot so that we don't get sick. The plants have their own, quote-unquote, immune system, too. And, you know, their immune system is that, like, if we ate McDonald's, for example, our immune system won't be so strong, but if we had a good diet rich in fruits and vegetables and antioxidants and vitamins and minerals, our immune system's stronger. So the plants are the same way. If you're feeding your plants like Miracle-Gro or some other, you know, chemical fertilizers, you know, your plants, yeah, they'll live and they'll probably produce for you, but they're not going to be as healthy as plants grown in rich compost, soil humates and rock dust trace minerals, and even using some stuff called insect frass, which will actually help the plants produce chitin, which actually breaks down the insect shells. So basically, when an insect or hard-bodied insect comes to eat your plant, it'll, like, get a taste of this chitin stuff, which will literally start dissolving its exoskeleton. And then it's going to go to some other plant like your neighbor's who doesn't have this growing in rich soil. Another thing that is really easy, especially if you're doing a home garden on a smaller scale, you know, the easiest control to use for pests is manual control. So what does that mean? That means going out and inspecting your plant and smushing the bugs or picking them off and feeding the snails to your chickens, for example. You know, and that's just really easy. But on a mass scale, when one farmer's trying to farm thousands of acres with tractors and stuff, they want it super easy, and they may not necessarily care about the environment, and they're not doing it for their health like I'm growing for my health. In addition, they have also many more organic controls to use that are, you know, organic and safer to use than, you know, than the toxic chemical pesticides.
Well, John, as we wrap up, you've toured a lot of gardens around the U.S. and even outside the U.S. Is there one more that you'd like to tell us about?
Wow, there's just so many gardens that I've visited. I can't really think of any one particular episode that I liked a lot. I mean, each one, I always learn something new. And, you know, that's what I really want to encourage people, whether they're visiting a community garden in their neighborhood, watching one of my videos, I always encourage people to have an open mind and to see what you can glean from the farm or the video you're watching of mine, because I believe, you know, and there's always something to learn that could improve your life and also improve, you know, how effective you are as a gardener at home.
Well, John Kohler, go ahead. Tell us your website for your juicing business and where to find your work on YouTube.
Sure. So my juicing business is discountjuicers.com, and that's where I sell the juicers and the blenders and the dehydrators, which allow people to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. I do have a YouTube channel associated with that as well, where I demonstrate juicers and compare them side by side, because that seems to be a big question, and that's at youtube.com/rawfoods. I also educate people about gardening, which is my biggest passion, and it's my number one hobby right now. I do this completely for fun and just because I want to give back to people and, you know, let them know what I think the best food on earth is, the things they could grow in their front yard, and that's at growingyourgreens.com. And then finally, the last website, which I did mention earlier, is about my specific plant-based raw uncooked diet at okraw.com.
Listeners, you can find all those links, plus a few of my favorite John Kohler videos, in my show blog at ecoshock.info. John, thank you so much for all your fabulous work.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Check out my Radio EcoShock blog for links to a dozen or more John Kohler videos to get you started. John has re-inspired me. I was drinking vegetable juice in Los Angeles back in the 70s, practically as a kid. I was growing lots of veggies in the 80s. It's just one of those things that keeps coming back. We learn again and start again. I bought a juicer this week, but not from John. He only sells in the United States. A local drugstore chain had a sale on the Big Boss Vita Press. It's a slow juicer that squeezes the veggies with a rotating auger. The Breville high-speed juicers are great if you're into hard fruits like apples and maybe carrots or beets, but they don't do well with leafy greens in my experience. Plus, a Breville has an 850-watt motor sounding like an airplane in your kitchen. It turns at about 10,000 revolutions per minute instead of maybe 100 or less by the slow juicers. By contrast, my slow-speed juicer needs just 150 watts, means it uses less power, and I can run it from my solar panel. The whole process with slow juicing is much more relaxing. The VitaPress cost me $169, with a 1-year in-store warranty and a 2-year factory warranty. I seriously considered buying one of the Omega models John shows in his videos, but in the end, I just couldn't afford more than $300 for a juicer. I'll let you know how the cheaper one works out. Last night we had a super green drink, including a bargain on organic black kale. I can't wait for the local farmers market to open. Hopefully by next year we'll be in a place where we can grow most of our own again.
Back to the land we must all lend a hand, to the farms and the fields we must go. There's a job to be done, though we can't fire a gun, we can still do a bit with the hoe.
John is pretty well feeding himself from a standard house lot in California. He's got several videos of tips for more northern folks, from the compost-heated greenhouse through sprouting greens anywhere inside in the depths of winter. For those who heard about my experiment with a little planter and indoor lights, I can report trying a couple of things. First of all, I asked myself, what would some listeners do? There's limited choices in some places. I tried the Walmart brand of planting soil, which promised it would need little watering. That turned out about as useless as I thought it would. The plants were starting to die off because the soil stays way too wet. I carefully removed my small plants, chucked the Walmart stuff, and went with a version of Mel's mix, 1/3 peat, 1/3 vermiculite, not perlite, vermiculite, and some compost. I also added some clean sand heated up in the oven to get rid of any outside life in it. Small containers benefit from sand, I think, to help drain the soil. Now my kitchen herbs and lettuce are doing great. I had to cut back the hours of light for the lettuce and move it back a bit because it was heading straight to seed under the light all that time from the T5 fluorescent running 16 hours a day. Things have grown so fast, I had to move the lights up 6 inches in the first 2 weeks. I also like having that fake sunlight in my studio as I prepare Radio EcoShock in the dark spring of rainy Vancouver. Burning just 24 watts, it's not too hard on the atmosphere, I suppose. Pretty soon we'll have the real stuff from the real sun. My thanks to listeners who responded with ideas for a seed show. I've got something in the works for that. I've also appreciated the feedback on our Facebook page and the blog and from the contact form on our website at ecoshock.org. I can't promise answers for everyone, but I do read it. Listeners provide a lot of direction and tips for this program. That's the way it should be. I appreciate your support. Stay tuned for one of the great voices of the environment, Helen Caldicott.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.